Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. In this week's episode, we find out more about a project to explore the relationship between science and faith, which has just been given a £700,000 grant. And we hear from the head of faith and policy at the Mothers Union as they look at the impact of commercialisation on childhood. But first, a Church of England-backed project has been awarded £700,000 from the Templeton World Charity Foundation to promote greater engagement between science and religion. The three-year programme will run at Durham University and will include the chance for churches to bid for money to hold their own science-related events. The Reverend David Wilkinson, who's professor in the Department of Theology and Religion at Durham University and also an astrophysicist, is one of those running the project. I asked him what they want to achieve.
One of the things that we've been particularly interested in the last few years is how we help senior church leaders, bishops, leaders of parachurch organisations, those organisations that bring different churches together, how we help them understand contemporary science and not see it as something to be fearful of or as a threat, but actually something that can help theology, that's important to take seriously as a church leader, because many people in churches want to ask questions about where does the universe come from? How does the first chapter of Genesis relate to that? What does it mean to be human in the light of biological evolution or artificial intelligence? Now, some of these questions are there and they're always there in the media and in the pew, and we wanted to try and help senior church leaders think about what the church's response to these kind of questions should be.
It does seem very often that it's a case of science or religion rather than science and religion. Do you think that's a fair analysis?
Absolutely, and you get it everywhere. So in the Oscar-winning Theory of Everything, which is a brilliant movie about the Hawking family, but nevertheless you get this sense that Jane Hawking's faith is something completely different from Stephen's science. And the two are in conflict, and science somehow squeezes out of God. And this is called the conflict model. And many folk, both outside the church and inside the church, buy into it. They think science has always been in conflict with religion. So Galileo is about the Bible or science. Darwin is about the Bible or science. In fact, the world is much more complicated than that, much more fruitful. My background is as a cosmologist, an astrophysicist. And I never found the conflict model. I found difficult questions of how faith and science relate, and some of them I still don't have answers to. But ultimately, those questions have been fruitful, both to my excitement with science and my excitement with Christian faith. And therefore, we want to tell a story which is different from the simple conflict way that is presented sometimes in the media and sometimes in the pulpit.
Now, looking at some of the projects that you'll be doing within your grant, you've got grants for, it says, innovative projects in local churches as part of new scientists in congregations. What's that about?
It's a conviction that there are many professional scientists who are within the Christian churches, but whose work and expertise sometimes isn't affirmed. Sometimes within Christian churches, there's a kind of hierarchy where the most holy people are the missionaries or the pastors or the priests. And actually you go down, and often the scientists are at the bottom, as if somehow this isn't work that God wants them to do. What we want to do is say that people who are professional scientists, engineers, who teach science, who are studying science at A level, this is something we want to affirm. It's a gift from God. And therefore, we've got a series of grants where local churches will be able to apply to think about how they can use the gifts of the people in the pew who may be professors of biochemistry or teachers of physics in their local secondary school, to say, how could we serve the community by using those gifts? So it might be, let's do a series of lectures for the local community to talk about the big questions. Where does the universe come from? What does it mean to be human? Is there other life in the universe? Or maybe for a local church to go to a school and say, why don't we do a sixth form conference together, where we bring together students who study science and students who study humanities and talk about some of these big questions? Well, what about getting together some of the scientists in the congregation and getting them to write something together, maybe for the website or maybe as a Lent course, so that you use the gifts of the people who actually day by day live as scientists and Christians. And that way, church leaders actually can learn a great deal from the expertise that are already in the congregation. Many church leaders give this impression that science is a threat to faith, or they're fearful of it. And sometimes when people are training for ordination, if they've got a background in science, that isn't affirmed very much. And part of this grant is to provide resources that colleges and courses throughout the country might want to use to enhance their teaching in the area of science and religion. I've been a scientist and I'm now a Christian theologian. Science still excites me. But it also seems to me to be one of those things that even within a postmodern world, people still want to ask questions about where does the universe come from? Where's God in all of this? And so as someone who's committed to communicating the Christian faith, I want to take seriously people's questions, and a lot of those are about science.
Professor David Wilkinson. And you can hear a longer interview with him about the project by going to the In the News section of the Church of England website. A book called The Ins and Outs of Selective Secondary Schools has been released by the independent think tank Civitas this week, with the Church of England's Chief Education Officer contributing a chapter. The Reverend Nigel Genders argues the focus needs to be on quality of provision, not admissions.
It's no surprise that one of the things which is of primary interest to parents when they're thinking about their children's lives is which school they want to go to, because that's such an important decision. And so the question about admissions to school has become very important for every parent to be thinking about. And so we wanted to contribute to this book because it's an opportunity to explain the Church of England's approach to admissions. We pride ourselves on being Christian schools for all people. We're not faith schools looking to provide a particular nuance of faith for a small group of people, but we're there for the whole community. But because our schools are so popular, we have to find ways of enabling that wider access to be available to different groups of parents and pupils. But the issue is about the popularity because of the quality of provision that parents perceive. So my argument in my chapter was that the focus should actually not be on admissions at all. It should be on the quality of provision. And if we focus on more schools offering the kind of rounded, holistic education that parents really want for their children, rather than an instrumentalist approach, which is about producing economic units of prosperity for the future, then actually our school system will be serving parents and families much better. Why the Church of England is involved in education is because of our theological underpinning and passion for an education which is about providing the whole needs of every child. And we want more schools that can do that, because that's about being at the heart of our mission to the nation, is about providing that quality of education for all.
Nigel Genders, the Church of England's Chief Education Officer. Archbishop Cranmer blogger Gillan Scott has also written a chapter on faith schools more generally and explains why he believes they have a valuable role to play in the education system.
Church schools, they've been around for centuries. The education system would not exist if it was not for the Church of England and establishing hundreds and hundreds of church schools a couple of centuries ago. So it's very much ingrained in our educational system. As soon as you start removing that, what replaces it? You end up with a big vacuum. So I think faith schools, they are fantastic. They work at so many levels really well in their communities, and they do provide an incredible ethos and educational experience for millions of children who go to their schools year after year.
You're a teacher, so you sort of see it from the side of being, yes, a Christian and being a teacher, which is fairly interesting. What do you think church schools have to offer?
There's an ethos that you get at church schools that it's very hard to put your finger on it and say, well, this is what makes a difference, and put it in a nice little box. But really it comes down to I think the aspect of faith, and that as Christians, we believe that everyone is equal in God's sight, and that all children deserve a good education, that no one should be treated differently, and that life is far more than just getting a load of qualifications at the end of school and going on and getting a job. There's far, far more to it than that. And I think that's what church schools are really good at doing, is saying, well, actually, that there's much more to with life. How do we encourage your children to become members of the community who are going to contribute, who want to do something with their lives beyond just making a load of money. And as that gets instilled into the pupils, I think that really helps to encourage them and also bonds community within the school. So it's all those sort of things that you can't really sort of say, you know, bullet points, this is what it's makes a church school so much better. When you sort of add them all together and put them into the mix, then it just provides a really good education environment that it's hard to replicate in schools that don't have that faith ethos.
And you can find the chapters written by Nigel Genders and Gillan Scott by going to the blogs box on the front page of our website. The Mothers Union has released research this week that shows parents are still concerned about the impact advertising and marketing are having on the lives of children and young people. 80% of parents who were questioned said that they worried about the effects. Lucinda Hazel, who's head of policy and faith at the Mothers Union, says advertisers have a responsibility towards children.
There's some advertising that they shouldn't be exposed to, and we want to make sure that advertisers adhere to regulations for that. We also want to make sure that if that is around, that parents know where they can report it to, but that parents feel confident in talking to their children about the types of advertising that they aren't seeing. 51% of the parents that we spoke to didn't really feel empowered to talk about the effects of the commercial world with their children, and it's really important for parents and children to both feel empowered and resilient, and children will be able to be more resilient if their parents are able to talk to them, I think.
Did you get any sense of how parents feel about constantly being pressured to buy things?
We know that 8 in 10 parents, it was 81%, said that the things that their children see, whether it's through kind of adverts, films, TV and the internet, they then ask their parents to buy them those things. And there's an anecdotal quote in our report as well that said, you know, we saw a film, we then walked past the store and my daughter said, please can I have that doll? So we know that parents are subject to pester power.
And what could the impact of that be? I mean, I suppose that can have all kinds of impacts on relationships, money, the whole lot.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And also, I think the report mentions the fact that parents don't want to feel that their child is perhaps the only one who doesn't have something. Things that are so become so prevalent that actually they're seen as the norm, not an optional extra.
Now, you're asking the government, you've got some recommendations for government. What is it you're asking for?
We want to make sure that actually this government and the next government, that there isn't complacency, that this important topic remains on the agenda. There's been some good work done, but we need to make sure that this work continues, that we continue to think about how it is that we can best protect children. There's some really good information and resources out there for parents as well, but we'd like government to commit to evaluating how those are used to incentivise uptake so that parents and children are really supported.
Would you like to see any changes to guidelines on advertising, for example, so that particular advertising doesn't take place when children might be watching television?
We've called for government to have a look at the sanctions that are in place to check that they're still adequate, that they're still working. And I think that's something we want to see continue, to see are things working, are children protected. We've also said that it should be, it's really important that people aren't only conforming kind of to the letter of regulation, but also to the spirit. We'd like to see the UK as a place of best practice where the needs of the children are really considered in those discussions.
Lucinda Hazel from the Mothers Union. And you can find out more details about their Bye Bye Childhood report by going to their website, www.mothersunion.org. That's it for this week's podcast. In next week's edition, I'll be reporting from the reinterment of Richard III at Leicester Cathedral. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.